Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. Well, this week we saw a ray of light, maybe even a glimmer of hope, of signs of bipartisanship in Washington. Budget negotiators announced a two-year budget deal that will hopefully avert another government shutdown, one that could have come as early as next month. So might Washington finally be getting out of the way of an economy that really, really just wants to grow? Well, joining me, as they do every Friday, WNYC contributors Joan O'Sara with The New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. And we're sitting here in New York, the home of Wall Street. What will this deal mean for business?
Well, hopefully it'll give businesses some certainty. One of the reasons why they haven't been investing all of the cash that's sitting on the balance sheets right now, some $2 trillion in the U.S., is that they don't know what's happening in Washington. They haven't known what the parameters of any budget would be, or even if we'd get one. They don't know about tax policy, regulations. So if this deal creates a kind of a sense that Washington is working together again and we're going to move towards a more bipartisan way of governing, businesses might feel confident enough to start investing some of that cash, which would bring down the unemployment rate and ideally start to raise wages.
You know, it's worth remembering that this is not a grand bargain of the sort that they were trying to do a couple of years ago and even last year. This is a really small deal that basically raises spending a little bit, raises taxes a little bit, but from that very low bottom of the sequester.
Those are automatic budget cuts.
That's right. But I remember a couple of years ago being at an event where Jeffrey Immelt, the CEO of General Electric, said if they could only do one bipartisan thing. And finally, they've done it.
It's such an important point because, you know, there was a big study of Harvard Business School graduates last year, and which are, you know, basically the corporate America here. We're talking about the leadership. And people didn't even care what policies were so much in Washington as long as there was an understanding of what they were going to be. They just want certainty. They want to know what the lay of the land is.
Just get something approved. So who are the winners out of this deal and who are the losers? Because there's always going to be one on both sides.
Well, the winners, I think, is pretty clear, are the Republicans. Even though Tea Party Republicans hate this deal. This, by doing this, and they purposely did this, they avoid a fight over the budget. They keep the focus on Obamacare, and they prevent themselves from looking like the people in Washington who are stopping everything, which was hurting them so badly just a few months ago.
And the losers?
Well, I think the long-term unemployed are going to be losers. You know, it's very possible that unemployment benefits won't be renewed at the end of December. And I'm not completely convinced, despite what I said earlier about businesses getting more confident, that we're going to see a dramatic reduction in unemployment very quickly. I think that there's some big structural problems in the economy, technology displacing more middle-class jobs that are going to continue to be with us regardless of what's happening in Washington. And so there's going to be a higher unemployment rate for a longer period of time than we've seen in the past.
The most complicated person in all of this is Paul Ryan. You know, on the one hand, he's done something that the mainstream Republicans really like.
Got a deal.
Right. So in terms of like presidential aspirations or so on, it's not a bad thing. But he's done something that the Tea Party Republicans really hate. It's not enough spending cuts. You know, it's not enough tax cuts. It's not shrinking the government. If you're running for anything as a Republican, you got to deal with the base before you can deal with the middle. And so the real question is whether this will have some lasting effect on him one way or the other.
Well, let me turn to another topic, and this isn't a setup for a joke, but what's the difference between Google and the NSA? And I ask this because...
Nothing.
Well, I ask this because, you know, this week we had this public campaign that was launched by some of the largest tech companies that what they really want is to try and have a plan or to set limits on online spying by the NSA. And yet, at the same time this week, we also learned that the NSA is piggybacking on the cookies that advertisers, online advertisers use to track where we go on the web. So let me ask this question. Like, is accepting a little bit of less privacy and more surveillance, whether it's by the government or by businesses, is that the price that we have to pay in order to take advantage of all the benefits that technology provides us now?
I mean, philosophically, no. Practically, yes, it is what we're paying. But I want to say, I think we're at the very early stages of this story. You know, a year ago, nobody knew who Edward Snowden was, for example. And a debate that was being had in policy circles and in technology circles is now really just reaching the mainstream. We're just beginning to really understand the parameters of this loss of privacy. And so I think that there's going to continue to be a lot of fallout. And I think that these tech firms are going to come under a lot of public and policy pressure in the next year.
As we say in New York, it takes a lot of chutzpah for Google, Facebook, Twitter, et al. To complain about the NSA. It is, they're trying to protect their business model. which basically takes advantage of the data that people give them for free. The NSA is trying to take advantage of the data people give them for free. So they're trying to make this distinction, government surveillance bad, our stuff, it's okay. And they're really not really talking about what they do. They're kind of hoping that people ignore it, as they have been doing.
Well, that's a question. Do you think that people, in a way, have been ignoring it, that I'm okay because I'm getting something out of Google or Facebook, and it troubles me, but I'm more troubled that the government perhaps is listening or reading my emails?
I think that that probably is true. But I think that these firms have had this kind of Teflon PR. If these problems had happened in other industries, I think that they would have hurt more than they have in tech, because there's this kind of good guy aura around it. But I think that's really changed. I mean, if you couple these data problems with the problems of tax avoidance or, you know, some of the other issues that have been plaguing the tech sector recently, I think that they're kind of replacing finance as the new bad guy.
Well, let's look ahead to maybe the next couple of weeks and some of the stories we're watching. Rana, what's on your radar?
Well, I've been really interested this week in the Volcker rule getting through. That's the rule that will help to reform the banking sector by curbing some of the riskier trading measures that can be taken by the big investment banks. Unfortunately, I don't think it goes far enough, and I think that there are a lot of reformers that feel the same way. And I think that you're going to see a lot of lawsuits, a lot of wrangling about the fine print in this for years to come.
Joe?
I'm looking at Cerberus, the private equity fund, which also happens to be, ta-da, the country's largest gun manufacturer. As you may recall, a year ago, right in the wake of the Newtown tragedy, Cerberus announced that they were going to sell their gun division because there was such an outcry from their investors. Here we are a year later with the anniversary of Newtown upon us, and Cerberus still owns the Freedom Group, which is the gun manufacturers. And it's hard to know if they tried to sell it or they're just kind of hoping this goes away. But I think it's worth keeping an eye on.
Well, we'll be watching that story and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. And when you're there, let us know what stories you think we should be watching for here on Money Talking. Don't forget, you can subscribe to this program as a podcast on iTunes. Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine, Jonah Serra with The New York Times. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.